We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Friday. You know what that means in college sports now? We're talking women's hoop, the best in the biz, her hoop stats, Megan Gower. Megan, it's got to be mid-February because last night I had the TV on ESPN, had the laptop on SEC Network Plus and Peacock. I had the tablet going, Big Ten Network. I'm getting into crunch time now. I mean, there's just games after game after game after game every night. It's great.
Yeah, it almost feels like March is close, which is it is.
Yes, but I got to get on you, though, to start the show. Herhoopstats.com. NCAA bracketology.
Yeah. It's coming today.
February 1st.
All right. I am in the midst of audits at the day job, and yeah, it's been a week, but it is coming today.
You said you were tired when you logged in. It's fine. Where do you want to start? You want to start? Well, how about this? We go reverse chronological order because there was a lot that happened last night. I have six games on the dock you want to talk about. So we'll start last night. Where do you want to begin?
Maybe with the ACC. I feel like those were the two biggest ones.
Virginia Tech going on the road to NC State, knocking off the Wolfpack in a game that they really took control of in the second half. That was, I think they were up at halftime, but only a couple. They took control in the third quarter, held on there. And then Louisville pulling away in the fourth or in the second half, just hitting three after three late against Notre Dame. So now we have an ACC leader, and it's Virginia Tech, a team that we've kind of dismissed a couple of times in the last few weeks. But I really like what I saw from the Hokies last night.
Yeah, it's a really good win from them to beat NC State. I think we've talked about how we feel like NC State feels like the clear-cut best team in this league. So to get that win on the road especially, I think is really impressive from Virginia Tech.
This is the Hokies team that I've wanted to see. They had four players in double figures, and that just, it brings them to such a whole new dimension. Like, obviously, you know, Kittley had 25 and 13. Georgia Amore flirted with a triple-double, 12, 8 rebounds, 10 assists. But then you had Kayla King with 13. You had Matilda Eck with 14. And just even getting contributions from those two players, like, I did some research. Virginia Tech this year said, four players in double figures 10 times. You ready for these opponents?
Mm-hmm.
High Point, 13 and 10. Houston Christian. Do you know what conference Houston Christian is in?
No, I don't.
Southland. It used to be Houston Baptist. Tulane, bottom three in the American. LIU, 6 and 16. Radford, below 500. Last in the Big Ten, Rutgers. 1 and 10 in the ACC pit. 0 and 11 in the ACC, Wake Forest. Florida State, and then NC State. So not exactly a murderer's row, and then you do it on the road at the number three team in the country. My thoughts on the Hokies, my ceiling for what I think they can achieve is higher if players like Ekin King play like that.
Right. And I think that's the big if at this time of season. It's like, it needs to be like, you've got to see those things consistently when you get to March. And I think when you start seeing things in February are not always sold that it's going to be consistently come March.
Virginia Tech coming up, Boston College, Duke, Louisville, North Carolina, Notre Dame, Virginia. That's fairly manageable. They're starting to play well. They've won six in a row now, a couple of those, three of those over ranked teams after they won in overtime against North Carolina on Sunday. Are they the favorite?
I don't know that I'll go that far. It could be. NC State does have a rough schedule left. I don't know. I feel like trying to predict anything in the ACC is a losing battle. It's just too chaotic.
That's fair. NC State, I still think, is probably... I think the ceiling for Virginia Tech is a little bit higher if they play their A-plus game. But I think NC State could be a little more consistent with that. I just think last night you just saw which this is a problem with Virginia Tech too. First time this year you've really seen that lack of depth maybe play a factor. Like Mimi Collins had a rough game. River Baldwin had a rough game. And Isaiah James was great in the first half. But, you know, when you only have six, seven players you rely on, like two of them have a rough night. And that's just the margin is smaller. I'm not too concerned about NC State. Just something to watch for in the next month.
Yeah, agreed. And I think we see that with a lot of teams right now, too, right? Like, the margin is small. The rotations have shrunk. The injuries have made that the case in a lot of places. And I don't know. It feels like almost everyone's, like, going through, like, a little rough patch right now. It's showing for some teams more than others. But I feel like outside of South Carolina, like, everyone seems to be going through it in February.
Yeah. Isaiah James, though, she's played really well the last few weeks. I feel like they're different players, but she's kind of going on a Georgia Amor-like stretch where last year Amor was pretty good, and then like February, March, she played so well. I think Isaiah James can maybe be on that trajectory if she keeps it up over the next couple of weeks. And she's not going to be first team All-American or second team, but she's playing her way into, you know, first team All-ACC, probably not ACC player of the year, but playing like it just at least in the last few weeks. So Virginia Tech's in first in the ACC, a half game back, another team that you and I have not dismissed, but just kind of said, the sky will fall a little bit eventually. And there's Louisville, 9-2 in the league with a win last night over Notre Dame.
Yeah, a good win for them. They just, like, I also thought that the sky would come falling eventually, but they just keep picking up the wins in conference play. So I think they've impressed me. And I guess maybe it just took some time to come together. A lot of transfers on this team, a lot of new pieces, and it's just maybe it's coming together at the right time.
Since they've lost to, well, they've kind of spread out their losses this year. The losses, 5 points to Alabama. I think that was a neutral site game. Lost at UConn handily, lost at North Carolina, lost Monday at NC State. So none of these are bad losses.
Right.
What most impressed me was the defense, which the metrics, I think, like the defense more than I do. I think it's an okay defense, but last night we're able to basically shut down everyone except Hannah Hidalgo, which that's good enough. Even Hidalgo, she wasn't efficient in her whatever 20-some-odd point effort. I still want to say, 20-4 overall. Like, there's something about them that I don't want to believe in, but they keep proving me wrong. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll just say, heck with it. I believe in Louisville.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I feel that way about so many teams at this point. It's like, well, someone's got to go to Cleveland. So,
right. It can't just be South Carolina and South Carolina and then playing the Gamecocks and then playing the University of South Carolina, like three other teams.
Right.
From Notre Dame standpoint, this is kind of my problem with the Irish. Again, one game on the road, like don't read too much into it, but just the consistent secondary scoring. Like Hidalgo at 21, no one else had double figures against an okay, not great defense. Like they were terrible from three. The offense has been better the last few weeks. So more of maybe a blip on the radar than anything, which keep it in mind for March that, you know, you're filling out your bracket. Notre Dame comes up against a high powered offense. Just can they keep up?
Yeah, agreed.
Right now, so NC State lost. Obviously, South Carolina's a one seed. We'll jump around a bit, but right now, who on earth is a one seed besides South Carolina?
I think Stanford's staying there. Even though they lost last weekend, I still think they're going to stay on that one line. Beyond that, though, Iowa is going to sit there. That last spot just feels like it's a revolving door, though. Honestly, I haven't gone through and looked at who's going to go there this week yet. It's probably maybe NC State, maybe UCLA has to fall off. They've lost too many games. I don't know who else is on that team. I don't even know who goes there, basically.
Find out later today. And
yeah, we'll find out today.
Latest NCAA bracketology update.
It might be NC State. I don't know. Even though they lost last night, I still think they might go there. I don't know that you can push anyone else there.
So let's talk Iowa. Fun game last night. Kind of a game that we thought might be fun. I don't think I expected 111 or 113 to 93. Yeah. Hannah Stolke. That's one of
the that was a
crazier
good sign for them.
47 points on 17 of 20 shooting. I mean, most of those are layups, but still, like, that's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, really impressive from her. I think, again, something that if they can get going with a little bit more consistency, she doesn't need to have 47, but, like, if she can just be a more consistent scoring threat and, you know, have 15, 20, that I think is going to be huge for them. But also 113 to 90-something. The 90-something is a little concerning.
Yes. This box score is wild. Iowa put up 111 points. Do you know how many finish in double figures?
Two.
Wasn't that three?
Three.
Stolke had 47. Clark had 27, 15. Jesus Christ. She had 12 turnovers last night.
Yeah,
she's allowed to have an off game. It's fine. It's fine. She still had 27. She had 15 assists. She still had more assists than turnovers, which is wild.
Yeah.
And Kate Martin had 16 points and 16 rebounds.
Oh, wow.
That's it. And then off the bench, Sydney Affolter almost had a double-double. She had 9 and 10. But still, three players in double figures, and he finished with 111 points. That's wild.
Yeah.
People, like, obviously, the offense is so good. Defense, last night aside, I think it's still a little better than last year. Just the danger with Iowa, again, as you're looking to start, you know, looking ahead to March, Iowa can pretty much outscore anybody. They can outscore anybody. Especially if they're bringing their B game. If they're playing another high-powered offense, like Penn State's pretty good offense. If they're playing another high-powered offense that has a better defense than Penn State, like, it's not... They can lose before the Final Four is what I'm saying. That's all. Just something to watch for.
I thought the thing, and I know we're going to talk about this game probably later, but like in that Maryland game, I thought the defense on their end stood out to me in that. Like, Maryland still didn't win that game. They probably should have not that they like should have beat Iowa, but in that, like, if you're that close and on the bubble, you gotta win those kind of games. But Maryland was really able to go inside and do what they wanted when they drove to the lane. And I thought that was maybe a bit concerning from a Iowa standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, it seems kind of stupid to say after their big just put up a 47 point game,
right?
A game in which they scored 111 points. Yeah, I mean, if they run into, obviously, South Carolina, who they beat last year, like, South Carolina's a different animal, but if they run into, I don't know, like, an LSU, like, that's just, it's all about matchups and playing a team with a couple of dominant bigs and a halfway decent defense, like, and they can score, which I understand this is a, you know, not too many teams match all of these criteria. I'm just saying, don't necessarily put Iowa in the Final Four in Penn. They're not perfect. Outside of South Carolina, like, there's really no guarantees, I don't think, nationally. So we can talk quickly about Saturday's game. I mean, I thought it was nice for the Terps to show a little fight. They took care of business at Rutgers on Tuesday. They just, you know, Brenda Freese afterwards said, it looks like an NCAA tournament team. It's like, yeah, it's nice that you competed with Iowa, but, like, you need to win some of these games to be an NCAA tournament team, given your other losses.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't, like I said, quite down the bracket this week, so I don't know where they're sitting. They're probably still... I would say they're probably sitting in that last four in group, but they're in that dangerous territory at this point where you're like, you're going to be hanging out in that bottom group if you don't pick up some of the, I think they've got an opportunity at Indiana maybe in the next week or so. Ohio State one more time. I think they're getting to, you got to pick up a win in one of these games territory.
I think, although by the time we talk next week, okay, maybe not, because that's the next weekend game. When's the 18th? Okay, so we won't know by the time we talk next week. Next two games, though, for Maryland. At Illinois, against Penn State. Otherwise, you're right. I'm going to assume they lose at Ohio State and they lose at Indiana. and then they beat Wisconsin and Rutgers at home. So that would put them at 15-12 if all of those results happen, basically if things go chalk. That leaves Illinois and Penn State. You win both, you're 17-12, you're probably fine. You split them, and you go, and you're 16-13 going into the Big Ten tournament. Like, I'll know in the next two games, I think, whether Maryland's going or not. Because if they if they don't go 2-0 in the next 2 weeks, they're putting a heck of a ton of pressure on themselves to either get one of those at Ohio State or at Indiana or go on a run in the Big Ten tournament. I just don't think that can happen.
Yeah, great.
We'll preview more of the stuff later, and we won't just talk about the big games. Like, obviously, South Carolina plays UConn, but you know, it's time to start looking at some of these bubble teams, including Alabama and Tennessee. I thought was one of the more important games of last night. Neither team's ranked. Both teams are firmly on the NCAA tournament bubble, though. Tied double up the Lady Vols in the third quarter. Leonai finishes with 23. They ultimately win comfortably. What does this do for Alabama, who now gets LSU? What does this do for Tennessee?
Alabama, I think, stays in. Tennessee is, I think, in trouble. Like, when you keep dropping these games to, you know, you're not just losing to your South Carolinas and your LSUs. I think it's hard to be like, oh, all those losses without Rekia Jackson are just because you didn't have Rekia Jackson. So I think Tennessee's in trouble. And they've got a rough stretch left here, too, right? They've still got South Carolina twice. They've got LSU. I feel like you've got to win that Arkansas game. You've got to win that Vanderbilt game. And you've got to win that Texas A&M game right now.
Yes. The women's side, again, they don't do quads. If they did, Tennessee is 2-8 against teams that would be Q1 and Q2 opponents. And that's just, again, they pretty much beat the teams they're supposed to beat. Like, their losses aren't terrible. Florida State, fine. Without Rekia Jackson, Indiana, Notre Dame, Ohio State, even Middle Tennessee. Like, Tennessee should never lose to Middle Tennessee, but that's a good mid-major team.
Not bad, yeah.
Right. At Texas A&M, fine. At Alabama, but they're both on the road. So, like, none of these losses are completely inexcusable. The problem is they beat Oklahoma. That's aged nicely. I don't see another. Mississippi State, okay, on the road, win by double digits, but like, there's nothing on this schedule that goes wow. And when you have the losses they do, you need a wow somewhere,
right? I mean, they've got three more chances at a wow. Do I think they're gonna pick them up? I don't know.
You don't think they're gonna stroll into CLA on March 3rd and beat the Gamecocks? Yeah,
no, I don't. So I think you got to circle that LSU game for them, try to pull off an upset there, because, I don't think you're beating South Carolina.
Fair enough. Nothing else really from the SEC. Actually, one other game from the SEC I want to ask you about. Texas A&M going to Ole Miss. They win by 19. Ole Miss, I think you have them pretty firmly in the field. Texas A&M, they're 16-6. Year 2 under Joni Taylor, much better than last year. They have a pretty good player in Janiyah Barker. Their net coming into yesterday was 36. Let me hit refresh. Hasn't updated yet. I don't think you had them in last week, unless I just missed them.
I thought they were, so now I'm looking for them, and maybe you are right.
Of course I'm right. Report. Come on, Megan. I'm always right. I lied. No, I'm wrong. You had those in 9 seed. So
okay, I was going to say, I'm like, 36 for net seems like, I don't know. I was like, I don't think I had anyone that was in the 30s out, or that high in the 30s out.
All right. Okay, well, I said I'm always right, and that lasted 3 seconds. But Texas A&M, this is a team that, like a lot of SEC teams, like Mississippi State, like Alabama, like even Ole Miss, like teams we don't really talk about a lot because they're not really ranked. They, even if they are, they'll come in for 24, 25 for a week, lose, and then we don't hear about them, but they're always just kind of receiving votes. They're hanging out there, 8-9 seed range. What do you make of this Texas A&M team that, like, we haven't talked about them yet, I don't think, this year?
Yeah, I feel like they're just part of that middle group of the SEC where, like, the teams aren't great, but they're also not bad. Like, they're all tournament teams. I don't know. Like, I feel like so much of this, it's, like, hard to say if they could make noise in the tournament, because I think so much of it comes down to matchups. Like, we're just gonna keep talking about this. Like, we probably said it like 6 times today, but I think especially this year, just like given that I think we've seen outside of South Carolina, pretty much everyone can get got by someone on any given night, and it's just, it's going to come down to matchups and who gets the draw that, you know, fits well for them, and they draw the right, you know, one seed. Could they pull off a massive upset? Maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, we've said it a lot, even the last 2 weeks, and it just, it goes to show you how far the game has come, because it's not that long ago. You could pretty much pencil in, make your final four, if not all four one seeds, like throw in a two. If you're feeling really frisky, you throw in a three seed. And, you know, we've seen teams make runs before that aren't one or two seeds, but it didn't happen a whole lot. And now it just happens so often. Like I say, I'm out on teams like LSU and UConn. Is there a path where, like, oh, LSU just runs into a bunch of small teams and literally, like, just beats the crap out of them four times and gets to Cleveland? Sure. I just, you know, in general terms, I haven't seen enough to be comfortable saying that, but it could happen. UConn can get a favorable draw. It can happen. It's all about matchups, including another team in that bill of Texas A&M, Ole Miss, half the SEC, it seems. Michigan State, waiting all year for that marquee win, because this is a good team, 17-6. They had Indiana on the ropes. Let them off the hook.
Yeah. I feel like this is the second time that's happened. They had Iowa on the ropes a few weeks back towards the beginning of conference play, and same thing. Iowa got away with the win there. But, yeah, a team that seems to be able to hang around with everyone but hasn't picked up that, you know, win that's like, here's the big one.
Yeah, I mean, if they beat Iowa, if they beat Indiana, especially, both of those were on the road, right? The Caitlin Clark game winner was at home.
Yeah, I forgot about Ohio State, too, but they only lost that one on the road by five, too. So
yeah, I mean, they're looking close at, like, 8-9 seed-ish. Like, win one or two of those, and suddenly you're looking at five or six seed. What are your thoughts on Indiana? I felt better about them after they lost at Ohio State on Sunday. Like, they were down, 14? I thought it was over. I think everyone thought it was over. They claw their way back, make it a game late. And I thought, all right, like, I saw some fight from the Hoosiers. And then, yeah, they won last night. But don't let it become a trend of you're going to decide to start playing when you're down 10.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still just not sold on this team. I don't know what it is exactly, but I'm not sold.
This is the Louisville of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
You're just not sold. I will say, Mackenzie Holmes is putting up basically identical numbers to last year when she was a first team All-American. The field goal percentage is down a whopping 1.5%. Mm-hmm. And the points are down about a point, but it's otherwise across the board, it's pretty much identical to when she was a first team All-American. And the numbers, I think I went on the tangent last year of like scoring 20 points or more a game on 66% shooting. Like the list of forwards who have done that is very, very small. Like all the best forwards you could possibly think of in women's basketball history didn't do it in college, and she's about to do it back to back years. So, I don't really have a point here other than I feel like she's still underappreciated despite the fact that she was the first team All-American last year. Like, I don't think she's going to be that this year. And she's literally doing like identically to what she did last year.
Yeah. I feel like some of it probably stems from like Indiana just not being as good. Like, this was a team you're talking about as, you know, number two team, number three team in the country last year. Whereas that's certainly not the case this year, but great. I mean, her numbers are still really impressive, and it's just kind of like flying under the radar. A little bit, I would say. I feel like part of it too is like they don't like. Do they have the big win yet? Too like they haven't.
No, they admittedly
they don't have a big win. Yeah, like another team. But yeah, scrolling through, I'm like, there's just no exciting win on this resume. They played. You beat Tennessee. Like that hasn't aged well. Like, yeah, it's a little underwhelming.
And two of their three losses, they got blown out. Like they went to Stanford. It was November, so you know it was a long time ago. You lost by 32, and then you lost by 27 at Iowa. Right. I don't want to say lucky to lose by five at Ohio State because they made shots late, but that game easily could have flipped. They were down 14 early in the fourth. That could have stayed somewhat out of hand. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be the person that, like this time last year, we had our first team All-Americans pretty much set in stone.
Right.
I think I even may have proclaimed it in like late January, and there was the five this year. Caleb Clark will be an All-American.
Yeah.
But like, you have Clark, Hidalgo, Juju, Beckers, Reese, Elizabeth Kitley, Mackenzie Holmes. I'm sure I'm missing people. Like,
yeah.
I didn't even mention a South Carolina person. They're the best team in the country, and they may not have, like, I guess Camila Cardozo's been good, but you're going up against people that are just putting up gaudy numbers. Like, I don't envy the Associated Press and any of these other teams, because we're stacked at the top of the game.
Yeah.
One other note of Thursday. We don't have to talk a whole lot about this. I don't think anyone saw it. I don't even know where to watch it. St. Joe's outlasting George Mason, two teams that are right there on the bubble in the Atlantic 10. As of last week, you had Mason on the first four out. Does this, I can't imagine there's many high opportunities in the A-10. Does this do it for George Mason's at-large chances losing at home?
Probably. I haven't quite done the math, but yeah, probably. I would say, like, I mean, them and Richmond have both been hanging around on the bubble. Maybe Richmond moves into their spot kind of there if they had a good week, but yeah. I can't say I watch a lot of A-10, to be honest. Like, you're correct. I don't even know where you watch it.
Saint, probably on Flow Sports, which I don't pay for Flow because I don't want
to. I only pay for it in November.
St. Joe's, 22-2, 11-1 in the A-10. They're 12-0 away from home. And then Richmond is 10-1. They play each other. Oh, they already played each other once in a game that was not on our radar. January 6th, Richmond won. So those are your top two teams in the A-10 and multi-bid A-10. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I'm rooting for it.
Yeah, I'm rooting for it too. I think they've got a good shot at it. Hopefully they don't, no one picks up that, you know, unexpected loss that just ruins the chance of it in the next.
Like, I understand how it works with the money and all that. But if you're going to ask me, would I rather see 23-5 Richmond as an at-large over 16-11 or like 17-12 SEC team? Like, just give me Richmond.
Agreed.
Just give me Richmond. Give me a team that, you know, won't get here a whole lot versus a team that like had lost 12 times and congratulations, you're okay.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Reverse chronological order. It was a busy Thursday. Wednesday, only one notable result. Baylor, that free fall continues.
Keeps going. Yeah.
On this pod, the first one we did a month ago, I was ready to make a case that Baylor was a top five team in the country. And then 2 days before we recorded that first one, they lost big at Kansas. So I kind of straight away, dodged that bullet.
I don't even understand what's going on. I feel like it was like, okay, they're not like this top five team that people thought they were because they were undefeated. And now I'm just like, what is going on? Like, this is the Big 12 is not that difficult of a league. Like, and they are just fully free-falling in it.
Yeah, this is the second time this year I've avoided that. Because if you recall, I was ready to state that Florida State was the best team in the ACC. I'm, like, crafting the argument when they're up 18 at Syracuse, and then they lost. So I, again, strayed away from it, and they've barely won since. I'm glad we record on once a week on Fridays. So Baylor will probably fall out of the top 25. They have a game against a pesky West Virginia team. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Reverse chronological order. Nothing really happened on Tuesday of note. Monday, we talked about NC State and Louisville. NC State really controlled that game start to finish. Anything, I guess, Sunday, while we're talking Big 12, Texas K-State, I think we might have been too quick to count out Texas.
Yeah, I think Texas might be better than I thought they would be without Rory Harmon. Like, they're not as good as they were, with Roy Harmon.
Of course.
Can't talk this morning. With Roy Harmon, obviously, but they're still pretty darn good.
Madison Booker, yeah. In years in which Juju Watkins and Han Hidalgo don't exist, like, she'd be a national freshman of the year front runner. Just this year, she just running into two superstars. But since the new year, only three opponents have shot better than 40% against him, so all without Rory Harmon. K-State was one of those opponents. Oklahoma, I think, is one of them. But still, this defense, as you would expect with Vic Schaefer, is pretty good. All of their losses have come in the conference. They're all, for the most part, acceptable, fine. And this is a team that if they can just – they're not great three-point shooting, but if someone like Shaylee Gonzalez can just do a little bit more, they just can shoot a little more efficiently. Like, I think Aaliyah Moore wasn't overly efficient against K-State. They can just find a little more offensively outside of Booker, just more consistently. Why not Texas over anyone else going to Cleveland?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, at this point, right, like, no, I'm not sold on anyone else in South Carolina, so why not a lot of these teams? But yeah, agreed. Their defense is good enough with the right matchups, and they shoot the ball okay. They could go.
K-State, without Aoki Lee, assuming she comes back in a couple of weeks and she's back and close to 100% by the tournament, pretty much anything K-State does until then, like, I'm not going to put a whole lot of stock into it. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. She's just too big of a part of what this team does.
And we're expecting her to come back. So it's not like, all right, this is what they're going to be the rest of the year. They will, in theory, should be able to get back to fully operational battle station, which leads us to a team that might not. UCLA, your beloved Bruins, dropped 4-7 after last week. They've alternated wins and losses. Corey Close says Lauren Betts, she's due back this season.
Yeah,
I'll take her word for it, but like, we've heard that from coaches before where it's mysterious. They're not saying anything. Oh, she'll be back this year. Oh, she'll be back this year. Oh, she's day to day. And then suddenly it's been a month.
Yeah. Like,
I'm out on UCLA until she comes back and I see her on the floor.
Right. I think 1 week it was one thing, and now what they were supposed to, like, put out a press release last weekend, nothing came out. I thought she saw something that she was supposed to play this weekend. Now she'll be back this season. Well, it's a lot of question marks right now.
Right. Different scenarios because we don't know what this is and we hope her health is okay. But like Olivia Miles, when she got hurt last year, do you remember Neil Ivey was like, oh, she's day to day.
Yeah.
Like, well, that was
a year ago. Yeah.
And she hasn't played since. So I don't think she was day to day last March.
Right.
But they're just, you know, if you're not saying it, they've given up 70 plus four times in this 7-game stretch. They've given up 80 plus three times. So this, you see the effect of Betts when she's not on the floor. The defense just isn't very good. They can still score. They still have talent. They can still, again, why not UCLA with or without Lauren Betts? Just without her, I don't think they can defend well enough.
Yeah, I feel like this is going to be a rough weekend for them too, because what she's out, isn't Dijalik in Brazil wherever they're playing the qualifiers for Serbia, she's playing. So they're down a few people. I think someone else from their team too is playing qualifiers. I'm blanking on who.
Now they're playing the desert schools, Arizona. That is average. Well, I guess in the Pac-12 they're a below average team, but they're 12-10. They're 4-6 in the league, and then Arizona State is towards the bottom.
Right. Arizona State, they should be fine. I think that Arizona game, if you're missing that many pieces in your front court, they should be able to handle it, but like that could get interesting.
I just want to see them handle it, and I'll feel a little bit better if they can take care of business. Excuses. Like, yes, obviously I hope Lauren Betts is fine. You know, you want your players, you want to go to recruits and say, look, we have people playing for Olympic bids. Like, this is good for the program.
Yeah.
Take care of business. That's all. Just beat Arizona at home.
Yeah,
mid Arizona. Beat Arizona State. Bad team. Just beat them at home. Take care of business and move on and hope that, you know, they get back to full strength in the coming weeks. Other Pac-12 takeaways last weekend. Juju.
We have to talk about that. Oh my God.
51 at Stanford.
Yeah. It's Stanford. She basically almost outscored Stanford entirely by herself. Like, that is incredible. Stanford had like 58, I think. Like yes. It was something, yeah.
26 field goal attempts. So 17 of 19 free throws. We've seen that a couple of times where she's just gone like 16 of 16 or 17 of 19 from the stripe. They almost got against a mid-Cal team 2 days later. So I'm not going to put them in right. as a Final Four contender. Like, I guess Iowa proved last year you can. Like, you can't, hard to get to a Final Four off the back of one player, especially a freshman. But if they have their A game, if she has her A game in the tournament, whether it's round one or in the Elite Eight, like you're going to know, I think, 5 minutes in, like, oh, USC, like, this is gettable, or, ooh, we're in trouble.
Yeah. Yep.
Stanford, I need more.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if Cameron Brink's allowed to have an off night shooting wise, but she, you know, she had 15 rebounds, 8 blocks. Irfan had 16 and 9. Like, Talana Lopolo can't play 40 minutes and shoot the ball twice. Like, she just can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Hannah Jump was okay, but I just need more.
Yeah. I think they need more from their guards. Like, their front court is obviously carrying this team, but they just got to get a little bit more from the guards.
Yeah. I mean, Sunday we saw them again without Lauren Betts. They take care of UCLA and frankly brush them aside. Brink had 19, 19, and 7. Again, it's all about matchups. Like, Stanford's right. Final Four good unless they match up with someone who can
handle,
I don't
that.
Even want to say equal, but like contain them ish inside. Like, USC did fine rebounding wise, held them to a low efficiency game. Again, Hannah Jump's a fine option, but just run into a team that has a little bit of size, and Stanford, like last year against a team like Ole Miss, like, they're gettable. It might be a one seed, but they're gettable.
Mm-hmm.
Any other Pac-12 takeaways?
No, I think that covers it.
It was a busy week.
It's going
to be a busy week. And I have a lot of games written down here for this weekend, starting with two Pac-12 teams that we haven't talked about yet. Oregon State is at the Mountain School. So they're at Utah tonight, and they're at Colorado on Sunday. I am ready to be 2 feet firmly in on the Beaver bandwagon. I think I will be if they split this weekend. Like, they swept these teams at home a couple weeks ago. I'm not going to ask for a sweep on the road against two good teams. That's hard. Right. They host them. They're in the mountains. They host the LA schools next week. They're at the Washington schools, both of whom are pretty good. They close again with Stanford and Cal. Like, if you go 5-3 in that span against 8 pretty good teams, I think I'll be in going into March.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this team, we've seen some good things. If you start seeing it consistently here, I think because they didn't play one in the non-conference, it's like, all right, can they keep stringing it together? But I think if they can, in this weekend will be a great test. I mean, I do think if they sweep this weekend, you start talking about, can they host in the NCAA tournament? But yeah, I'm interested to see what they do.
24th in their HoopStats composite rankings. There's a bunch of Pac-12 teams in this. USC's 21, Washington State 23. Ooh, Utah 6th in the metrics.
Yeah, they're like really high in the net too. I think they've played a tough schedule. I don't know how they're that high though.
The net, they are also 6th in the net at 15-6. The net has been updated. Let's see. Alabama stays at 28 after winning last night. Other notable games. I don't see any massive jumps. It's Minnesota, a bubble team. They dropped from 38 to 42 after losing to Ohio State last night. I don't see any other significant jumps. But yeah, Utah, metrics darling. And obviously they have a superstar in Alyssa Peely. Why not? That's going to be the theme of today's show. Why not Utah?
Why couldn't
sure.
it be this team? Yeah.
Sure. We mentioned UCLA hosting Arizona. That's really it for tonight. Tomorrow, a couple of Big 12 games. Talk to me about this West Virginia team. They're 20-2. Didn't really play anyone non-conference. They lost by 21 to Texas. They lost by 10 at Iowa State. That was the very next game, so just a week-long blip. Taking on a Baylor team. Tell me about these Mountaineers. The record's good. They're ranked, 24th, and they have an opportunity for what is now a ranked win. It probably wouldn't be if this game was a week from now.
Yeah, I don't know that beating Baylor does much for you right now, but yeah, I mean, it's still a decent win, right? Like, Baylor's still going to be a tournament team. I think where they, like, are their best is on the defensive end. They lead the country in steals, and it's not, like, one player, like, you know, Hidalgo, that just comes up with all these steals a game. They've got, I think, 3-4 players that average 2 2.5, 3 steals a game. So it's kind of a team effort. So that's rarely where they get their success around them. Okay, and the other metrics, but that, you know, forcing the turnovers is really what's allowed them to excel. But I feel like they're kind of missing that signature win too, right? Like, you didn't play anyone in that conference, and now in the Big 12, you've got to like knock off a Texas or a Kansas State to really get a big win. Baylor's a good one, but Baylor doesn't look like they might have thought it would at the beginning of the conference season.
The highlight of the non-conference, a win over Penn State. Penn State's a tournament team, right? Decent win.
Yeah.
But they average 14.5 steals a game. They have, of course, 1, 2, 3, 4. They have 4 players with 50 or more steals. No. Shout out to Mark Kellogg, his first year in Morgantown, doing good things for a West Virginia team that they made the tournament last year, right? They were in a 7-10 game against Arizona that, frankly, yeah, I didn't watch 1 second of.
Yeah, it wasn't a game that did much for me.
Yes. But West Virginia firmly back in. Probably not in line to host despite the gaudy record, but probably in line to be, what, like 5-6 seed?
Yeah.
And then Iowa State, Oklahoma. The Cyclones have a stretch of Oklahoma, K-State, and then at Texas. They've dropped 3 of 4. One of those, they dropped 4 of 6, and one of those wins was the forfeit to TCU. They were riding high a few weeks ago. Now, are we talking must win?
Yeah, kind of feels like it. You've got to start picking up some of these important wins and the ones that you can get, right? Especially when you've got Kansas State and Texas went left, like those are harder to win. So you take a lot of pressure off yourself if you pick up a win versus Oklahoma.
38th in the net coming into the day. So you're looking in the same range as Syracuse is 39 in the net. I didn't expect that. Florida State, Miami, even Oklahoma is 36th in the net. So I think both of these teams, I think Oklahoma's in regardless, but they could certainly be a nice resume booster. But Iowa State, a team that we were talking, what, a month ago, they were early on in Big 12 play atop the standings, had a couple of nice wins, and suddenly now they're flirting with the bubble. Sunday, big game, South Carolina, UConn, no Camila Cardozo. She is off with Team Brazil. South Carolina's at home for this one. I gave my thoughts on the Huskies last week. They haven't changed after an ugly win over Seton Hall on Wednesday. Yeah, we're not going to talk about that game. But talk to me about, do the Huskies have a chance going into a place that South Carolina hasn't lost since 2020, but without probably their most important piece on a team that has a lot of important pieces, but Cardozo probably the most important?
Yeah, I think it depends what version of UConn shows up for this game. Like, there is a world where it happens where UConn brings their A game, and when UConn playing their A game, I think they can compete with anyone in the country. The way Yulia Edwards has played the last few games has really impressed me. She had, what, 30-something against St. John's, and yes, it's just St. John's, but I still think that's something as good as she has been. We haven't seen her do in her career before, like, really go out there and dominate in that fashion. So I think, you know, if you get All-American Paige Beckers and All-American Leah Edwards and them playing at that level, yeah, they have a chance. Do I think they're necessarily going to win it? No. I think it's a hard place to win in general. I think you have a better chance because Cardozo isn't there. But I think it's going to depend what version of UConn shows up and not getting intimidated by the crowd, which when you have 4 freshmen in a rotation, I don't know that that's going to happen. Yeah,
4 we'll of your see. 7 player rotation.
Yeah.
And realistically, like, I don't know how much Caden Samuels is going to play, so it might be a 6 person rotation, barring foul trouble. So 2 ways to look at this for me from a UConn standpoint. Like, you go to Colonial Life Arena and lose, especially close game. Like, there's no, like, that's respectable. No shame in that at all. But to do it without Camila Cardozo, like, I wonder mentally where the Huskies would be at, given they'd lose 4 in a row to South Carolina in this instance. And sure, it was on the road, but if you can't beat them without their 6-7 monster in the middle, like, what gives you any hope that if you see them in March, you're going to be able to do it with their 6-7 All-American type person? So I think it's a psychological thing for the Huskies. You're right. Aaliyah Edwards has been great. She's averaged like 25-12 the last like month, the stretch of consistency we've never seen from her. Mm-hmm. My question is, I know without Cardozo, Ashlyn Watkins is probably going to start, but Malaysia Full Wiley is going to come off the bench. Like, I have visions of full Wiley going uncontested to the rim as many times as she wants. Like, she had a big game last night against Missouri as Gamecocks, no Cardozo, no problem, took care of business against a bad Tigers team, admittedly.
Yeah.
I just see full Wiley, though, having her way, given what UConn's done against quick guards this year, which is admittedly not much.
Right, yeah. I think it'll be a good test for UConn to see if they can do something with her in terms of their defense off the bench. And can they try to stop that trend a little bit? But, yeah, I don't know. And they, like, the problem is UConn doesn't really have anything that's going to come off the bench that's going to change the game for them. They have Ice Brady to give Aaliyah a break or to put some more size on the court. But barring her having some kind of explosion, which, you know what, it can happen, but, like, we've only seen her have, like, a couple good games.
Now, from the South Carolina standpoint, they've had a couple of tests this year. Utah gave them a test. They had some marquee games in the non-conference, but the last 2 months or so, because the SEC's kind of meh, like, mm-hmm. LSU was a big test on the road in that environment. They passed it. This is a different type of test now against a pretty good UConn team. Like, LSU obviously has the size. They're not great from three-point range. This is a little bit different of, yes, Aaliyah Edwards is very good inside, but now Huskies have more shooters. So from South Carolina's standpoint, one of the few times in the, you know, between December and March that they're going to get a true test. I just want to see how they handle it. I expect them to win still, but just it's something that, you know, we're looking to pick holes into an unblemished right. South Carolina team. I don't know. I'm feeling a little desperate. This is
also, like, I feel like if they lose to UConn team because, like, Aaliyah and Paige go off or whatever, and then I don't know, Ashlyn Shade hits 4 threes and they lose that game, like, without Cardozo, like, I don't really think I think anything different about South Carolina than I did going into that game.
Right. Short of, like, if they this won't happen.
Buried or something.
Right.
Yeah,
if they just got blown out. Like, there's
right.
Sure, if you ran the simulation 10,000 times, like, that'll come up a couple of times.
Once,
but
yeah.
Right. It's a lot more likely that they do the blowing out. It's so dangerous because I want to go and say, well, you know, South Carolina is so good, so good, so good, and then have last year repeat itself. And, like, they certainly could lose in the NCAA tournament, but right now they're a class above everyone else.
It almost might be better for them to lose this game and that, like, you get that loss and, like, it doesn't happen in March. I don't know. I feel like sometimes you see, like, you look at, like, all those UConn teams, like, post Brianna Stewart, where it was like, oh, this whole changing of the lineup and, like, they never lost. They were still so good. And then, like, you get to March and you lose that Final Four game. And it's like, you would rather drop one in the regular season.
Right. Like, the best thing that may have happened to South Carolina 2 years ago was blowing that lead in the SEC championship game.
Right.
Took care of business again the rest of the way. So that's the marquee on Sunday. South Carolina, you kind of think it's at 2. Other games I'm watching for, Duke, North Carolina. Blue Devils, another team that the metrics like. You aren't as high. The Blue Devils, as of last week for you, were an 11 among the last 4 buys, I guess. After beating winless in the ACC Wake last night. Here's a Blue Devil schedule, though. North Carolina, at Virginia Tech. Notre Dame, at ranked Syracuse. Home to NC State. Virginia at UNC. So that's 7 games remaining, 4 against ranked teams and then 2 more against North Carolina, which very well could be ranked.
Mm-hmm.
So is your projection based on what Duke you think will do? Because they're 15-7. I think they'd be in if the tournament started today, but that's an awfully hard schedule.
Yeah, it's that. And then they have that one Virginia Tech win, but, like, other than that, like, the who have we beat?
Well, they have a lot of chances to say who do we beat.
Yeah, exactly. They could easily play their way firmly into the field or firmly out of the field in the next couple weeks.
Other games on Sunday. So she only had, what, 20-something last night. So Caitlin Clark will need, I think, 40-some-odd points to break the scoring record. By the time we talk next week, she'll be the all-time leading scorer in NCAA history. So I don't want to ask you as much about the game. Like, they'll beat Nebraska. What else? There's your analysis. They'll beat Nebraska. As it stands right now, Friday, February 9th, 9:49 in the morning, Eastern Standard Time. Standard? Daylight? Whatever. 9:49 a.m. What is her legacy to you?
I think she's one of, if not the best scorer that the game has seen. And I think she's also taken an Iowa program that wasn't really on the map and put it very firmly on the map. Then I think the other thing is, like, I don't know, she's just captured the attention of fans that weren't necessarily women's basketball fans before this. And, like, people talk about Caitlin Clark all the time. Like, I'm on work calls and people know I'm into women's basketball, obviously. And people are like, oh, Caitlin Clark did this, Caitlin Clark did that. Like, she has this level of attention around her that I think, yeah, there have been other players that have had that, but I think it feels like it's like a different level.
Like, right player, right time. Mm-hmm. In 2024, like, they have a freaking TikTok cam. I'm way too old for TikTok.
I feel like I'm too old for TikTok. So
I don't have an account. Like, I don't know how to make a TikTok, but, like, the fact that they have a TikTok cam on her is kind of identical. You know, it's wild. Mm-hmm. To me, I see a lot of folks, media members or just fans, saying, you know, she's the GOAT. I'm not ready to put her there. I think, to me, she's the most skilled player maybe I've ever seen. Because people forget she shattered the Big Ten assist record, too. Mm-hmm. The record was 901 or something like that. She's going to finish well over 1,000. She might be the biggest draw we've ever seen, given the TV rating she brings and the attendance that she pretty much single-handedly brings. I can't put her in the same company as, you know, Brianna Stewart, Diana Taurasi, Cheryl Miller, Shamika Holtzclaw, Tamika Catchings, Candace Parker, Maya Moore. Like, yes, she has all the stats and all the individual accolades. Those players have
championship
and multiple national titles.
Yeah.
If she carries, again, it's February 9th. She carries this team to a national title this year after what she did last year, coming up a game short with the greatest run I've ever seen. This is a different conversation. Right now, though, I think there's a difference between, like, she might be the most skilled player I've ever seen, the best scorer I've ever seen. She's not the best player, if that makes sense. Right.
Yeah. I think on the defensive end, like, you're talking about some players in there that, yeah, were different on the defensive end, but too, yeah. I just think the championships matter, and, like, her offense is incredible, but there's other pieces to the game too.
I mean, yeah, I think, like, people forget how good Tamika Catchings was, because she wasn't this, I mean, she was a good scorer. She wasn't some mm-hmm. prolific scorer, but what she did on the defensive end is just otherworldly. Mm-hmm. Other games on Sunday, couple of more. Maryland, Illinois, talked about it. Like, this and Penn State are the games where, like, I'll know whether Maryland makes the tournament, I think. And mm-hmm. then Alabama, LSU, Crimson Tide did a lot for their resume last night with a comfortable win over Tennessee. Now a chance to, would a win Sunday, barring some sort of collapse, meltdown, would they pretty much be in?
Yeah, I think they're close to in now. I think I do think I had them the last four in last week against, but I don't know. I feel like they are likely to stay on the good side of the bubble.
Fair enough. Last game on Sunday, noted NFL analyst, fan, whatever you want to call her, Megan Gower. I know you watched a ton of football.
Yeah.
Give me your Super Bowl pick.
I'll go with the Chiefs because my uncle works for them and because I love Taylor Swift.
I was about to ask you, are you Swiftie?
Yeah.
Like, what level are you? Did you go Eras Tour?
I have not, but not because I haven't tried to get there endlessly. But I also, like, have a hard time justifying, like, $1,500 resale tickets.
That's fair. So, you know, has she's swept the NFL world for whether you love her or hate her? Like, are you any more interested in any of this stuff with Travis Kelce than you were, you know, 3 months ago with football?
No,
has it done anything, like, for you?
Not in terms of watching football, no. I know that people are tuning into the games because she's there. I'm like, I'll see the pictures on Instagram. I don't need to watch the football game to see the 30 seconds of clips of her that they're going to show.
So you're not. Real Swifties, Megan. They're on Reddit. They're talking about, like,
yeah,
breaking down NFL rules. Come on. Are you going to watch the game?
Yeah, I'll watch the game. I always watch the Super Bowl.
Does Usher do anything for you at halftime?
No, honestly. Not that exciting for the halftime show. I like the commercials. The commercials are where it's at.
Growing up, it was always like, oh, you have these old people performing, and now we're at the stage in our lives where are the old people? I mean, I'm not a big Usher guy, but like, you know, if you had the last couple of years, Rihanna last year, she had a lot more. The hip hop thing, which everyone loved a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, all these like 90s and 2000s artists, that new kids, like, oh, but all these old people.
Yeah.
Cool. Megan, plug your stuff, because I swear, if I go on herhoopstats.com at like 5 o'clock tonight and Bracketology isn't updated, I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah, it's coming today, I promise. So Bracketology update coming today. First seed reveal is next Thursday too. So some stuff
is
coming
it?
Around that. Yes, it is. So
that should be interesting. We have a lot. Yeah. We have a lot to break down with that, because we know who one of the one seeds will be. Well, probably two. After that.
I'm like very interested to see. I think it's a lot of like splitting hairs at the top, so I'm interested to see like where the committee falls on some stuff that's pretty close.
Well, Megan, enjoy the Super Bowl. Enjoy seeing Taylor Swift on TV, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds good.